Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Today's episode is brought to you by the beverage beer, finest quality premium lager, 4.7% alcoholic volume. It's a beer. I don't know if that's the best plan I've ever had, but I just fell asleep on the couch, and then I woke up and realized I had to do the podcast. And so I started the podcast, and after 2 minutes, I was like, whoa, I don't know. I actually don't think I'm making any sense. I'm pretty sure I'm still asleep. So I pressed stop, pressed delete, and I'm starting again. I was really rambling, and I don't think my sentences were actually sensical. I think they were nonsensical. So I thought, all right, I need to wake myself up. I need a cold drink. So I grabbed a beer out of the fridge. I don't know if that's the best plan. I don't know if this is going to actually make me more coherent. I mean, I'm not going to get drunk off a beer, but I don't know if a beer really wakes you up, does it? Also, who takes a nap and then wakes up and immediately has a beer? I'm on holidays, all right? It's holidays. It's summer over here. Someone visited me a week ago, and they brought a six pack of beer, and I bought a six pack of beer, and then my fridge got left with lots of beer in it, essentially. So I'm just having beers here, left, right, center. I'm just beer over there, beer over here. So here's something I did the other night. On the New Year's Eve episode 371, the one that marked the end of 2 years straight of podcasting, I forgot, or accidentally didn't, upload the episode. And I didn't notice that until the next day. I recorded an episode, finished it, went to upload it, and realized, wait a minute, where's yesterday's one? I don't know how I managed to forget that. It was New Year's Eve, and it's not like I was out having a big New Year's Eve or anything. I just had an early night. It was just pure chance that that was the day that I happened to not upload it. And I've done that before, but someone always calls me on it. Someone will always message me and say, yo, where's the day's episode? I think because it was New Year's Eve, everyone was out, too busy, no one noticed. And I didn't even notice till 24 hours later. But the funny thing is, in that episode that was a day late, I said something along the lines of, this marks the 2 years straight of every single day without fail uploading an episode. And then I failed to upload that episode. I thought that was quite funny. Beer, delicious. Anyway, we're talking about part six, chapter six. Varenka, new character? Oblonsky and Levin, never has there been two brothers-in-law so dissimilar. I am Norwegian, said, this is not very related, but semi-related, oh, I'm joining the war and peace discussion, I can't help myself, ha ha ha. Thermos of Beer said, good luck, I finished it with the 2019 group and loved the experience. Oh, Thermos, I didn't realize you were doing Year of War and Peace last year. Well done, congratulations on finishing. After reading your comments for the last 6 months, I feel like War and Peace is a book that's right up your alley. I would agree with that. I think I Am Norwegian, you're going to love it. You get a fictional story, real history, and Tolstoy's thoughts and ideas on all of it. I found it a bit daunting to start, but I feel like you'll fit right in over there. You certainly will. I Am Norwegian, everyone. Anyone who does the Hemingway List. Look, these two podcasts, these two subreddits are so tightly linked that it's just one big community. It really is. So if you want a bit extra Tolstoy, jump over and get stuck into War and Peace. I'm Norwegian said, I'm really tempted. Oh, okay. So this is, I've read these out of order. Before having said that last bit I just read, I'm Norwegian said, I'm really tempted to join a Year of War and Peace. We all know how that saga ends because I've done this out of sync. But I know we're going to be reaching the book eventually here. Maybe I'll just read it twice. It's not like I have enough on my plate with this and the demons over at Dostoevsky. Sergei's description of Levin as clamming up or flailing about wildly like a fish on dry land is in company made me laugh. We brought up how Kitty would be a poor fit for the country, and now that issue is finally coming to fruition. Hopefully Levin won't say yes and then get all passive-aggressive like he's been robbed of something. Look at how terrible the world and its people suddenly seemed just because the prince wasn't in the carriage when Levin expected him to be. Simply Productive said, oh yeah, by the way, just on the whole war and peace thing, I'm going to be involved in the A Year of War and Peace subreddit this year. I'm not sure if I'm going to read along, but I am going to moderate the subreddit. So especially at the start, to get the ball rolling, I'm going to be hosting the discussions and getting involved. So yeah, I'll see you over there. Simply Productive said, what just happened? I feel a bit lost. What is the significance of the carriage? Those two are so different. Like my brother and I just can never get my brother. I like to watch gardening shows for leisure, and he's obsessed with reality TV, which I'm sure is fine, but I just don't enjoy it. I feel like Oblonsky would get on my nerves too if I were related to him. Do you guys think Oblonsky would be the reality TV lover in today's time? Thermos of Beer said, Levin was feeling pretty content with his life in the country, and even though he felt all these Shabatskys were cramping his Levin style. He was annoyed at Steva for not teaching Grisha himself and leaving it to Dolly, and so offered to teach Grisha himself. He knew Steva was coming to the country and hoped Kitty's dad was going to come too. Levin was growing fonder of Papa Shabatsky the more they got acquainted. So when the carriage showed up with Steva and this other fellow that wasn't Kitty's dad, Levin was a bit vexed. This new fellow, a gentleman from society, is sort of the opposite of country loving Levin. Everything turns sour for Levin. He sees the formal greeting as fake. He's annoyed with Steva kissing Dolly's hand and feels this is also fake, thinking to himself, whose hand was Steva kissing yesterday? And now he pretends he's happy to see his wife. I'm not sure if Levin feels like our new gentleman, Vasenka Voslovsky, is a threat to him, but he's certainly annoyed that his farm is a vacation for these society folks from the city, and that they, in Levin's mind, don't realize how hard Levin has to work to run his farm. Oh dear. Okay. I'm Norwegian, so I have a twin brother, and we're both extremely similar and very different. Obviously, we look extremely similar. We both like to make music and play instruments, but the music we make are very different. I listen to metal. He's more of a sampler, weird electronic music kind of guy. We both love books and philosophy, but he's on that French everything is perspective and there's no objective truth and religion is stupid train. He's also a philosophy student. We've approached these interests at different times in our lives, but the areas of our interest always seem to converge, even when we find ourselves at opposite ends within them. It does mean that we have a lot to talk about, though. Sorry, just having a sip of beer. Yum. Yeah, right. Okay, I didn't realize you had a twin. That's really, really cool. I am Norwegian. I'm just trying to think if I've got anything to add. And for the first time in my life, I don't. So I'm just going to keep reading. Oh, man, my brain's asleep. I'm sorry. Oh, dear. Holy moly. Okay, I'm very, very tired. Let's go. Chapter 7. That beer's not helping. Beer is not a good pick-me-up. I'm coming to realize this. Levin did not return until they called him to supper. On the stairs stood Kitty and Agatha Mikhailovna, deliberating what wines to serve. But why all this fuss? Serve the same as usual. Nope. Steva does not drink it. Kostya, wait a moment. What's the matter with you? Said Kitty, hurrying after him, but without waiting for her. He went away pitilessly with big strides to the dining room, where he immediately joined in the general animated conversation, which was kept going by Vasenka Veselovsky and Oblonsky. Well then, shall we go shooting tomorrow? Oblonsky inquired. Yes, do let's go, cried Veselovsky, changing from one chair to another and sitting sideways with one of his fat legs doubled under him. I shall be very pleased. Let's go. And have you had any shooting this year? Levin asked, gazing intently at his leg, but with that pretended politeness of which Kitty knew so well, and which suited him so ill. I don't know whether we shall get any snipe, but there is plenty of woodcock. Only one must go early. Will it tire you? Aren't you tired, Steva? Aye, tired? I've never been tired yet. Let's not go to bed at all. Let's go for a walk. Yes, really. Don't let us go to bed. Delightful, chimed in Veslovsky. Oh, we are quite convinced that you can do without sleep and deprive others of theirs, said Dolly, with that scarcely perceptible irony with which she now generally addressed her husband. I think it's already time. I'm going. I don't take supper. Oh, no. Stay here, Dolly, dear, said Oblonsky, stepping across to her side of the long supper table. I have much more to tell you. I don't expect you have any news. Do you know Veslovsky has been to see Anna? And he is going there again. You know, it's only some 70 versts off. I shall certainly go over. Veslovsky, come here. Vasenka came over to the ladies and took a seat beside Kitty. Oh, do tell me. Have you been to see her? How is she? Asked Dolly. Levin remained at the other end of the table, and while not ceasing to talk with the princess and Varenka, saw that Oblonsky, Dolly, Kitty, and Veslovsky were carrying on an animated and mysterious conversation. Moreover, he saw his wife had an expression of serious feeling as she gazed attentively at Vasenka's handsome face while he was vivaciously narrating something. It's very nice at their place, Vasenka was saying, talking of Vronsky and Anna. Of course, I do not take it upon myself to judge, but in their house one feels oneself to be in a family. What do they mean to do? I believe they mean to go to Moscow for the winter. How nice it would be for us to meet there. When are you going, Stephen Arkadyevich? Asked Vasenka. I shall spend July with them. And will you go? Oblonsky asked his wife. I have long wanted to go and certainly shall go, replied Dolly. I know her and am sorry for her. She is a splendid woman. I shall go alone when you are away and won't inconvenience anyone. I will even be better without you. That's all right, replied he. And you, Kitty? I? Why should I go? Said Kitty, flushing deeply and glancing round at her husband. Are you acquainted with Anna Arkadyevna? Veslovsky asked her. She is very attractive. Yes, said Kitty, with a still deeper blush, and she rose and went to her husband. So you are off shooting tomorrow, she asked. Levin's jealousy during those few minutes had gone far, especially after the blush that had suffused her face when speaking to Veslovsky. Now, as he listened to her question, he interpreted it in his own way, strange as it seemed to him when he remembered it later. It now appeared to clear to him that she asked whether he was going shooting only because she wanted to know whether he would give that pleasure to Vasenka Veslovsky, with whom he fancied she was already in love. Yes, I am going, he answered in an unnatural voice that was disagreeable to himself. No, wait a day, because Dolly has seen nothing of her husband. You could go the day after tomorrow, said she. Levin now interpreted her words thus. Do not part me from him. Your going does not matter to me, but do not let me enjoy the society of this charming young man. Oh, if you wish it, we will stay at home tomorrow, replied Levin with particular amiability. Meanwhile, Vasenka, without the least suspicion of the sufferings his presence was causing, rose from the table after Kitty and followed her, smiling pleasantly. Levin saw that smile. He grew pale and for a moment could hardly breathe. How dare he look that way at my wife, he thought, boiling with rage. Tomorrow, then, please let's go, said Vasenka, sitting down at once and once more doubling his leg under him, as his habit was. Levin's jealousy rose still higher. Already he fancied himself a deceived husband, necessary to his wife and her lover, only to provide them with the comforts of life and with pleasures. But nevertheless, he asked Vasenka in an amiable and hospitable manner about his shooting, his gun, his boots, and agreed to go shooting next day. Happily for Levin, the old princess put a stop to his sufferings by herself getting up and advising Kitty to go to bed. But he did not escape a fresh pang. Taking leave of his hostess, Vasenka again wanted to kiss her hand, but Kitty, blushing, drew away her hand and said with a naive rudeness for which she was afterwards reprimanded by her mother, "That's not customary in our house." In Levin's eyes, Kitty was to blame for having laid herself open to such behaviour, and still more to blame for so awkwardly showing that it displeased her. "What's the good of going to sleep, eh?" said Oblonsky, who, after a few glasses he had drunk at supper, was in his pleasantest and most poetic mood. "Look, Kitty," he went on, pointing to the moon rising behind the lime trees, "how lovely. Veslovsky, now's the time for a serenade. Do you know he has a fine voice? We have been rehearsing on the way. He has brought some beautiful songs, two new ones. He ought to sing them with Mademoiselle Varenka." After the rest had separated for the night, Oblonsky long walked in the avenue with Veslovsky, and their voices could be heard practicing a new song. Levin sat listening to them and frowning in an easy chair in his wife's bedroom, meeting her inquiries as to what was the matter with stubborn silence. But when at length she asked with a timid smile, "Aren't you displeased about something connected with Veslovsky?" he gave vent to his feelings and told her everything. He himself was offended by what he was saying, and this still further irritated him. He stood before her, his eyes glittering terribly under his frowning brows, and pressed his powerful arms to his breast, as if trying with all his might to restrain himself. The expression of his face would have been hard and even cruel, but for a look of suffering which touched her, his jaw trembled and his voice faltered. "Understand that I am not jealous. That is a vile word. I cannot be jealous, nor believe that. I cannot say what I feel, but it is dreadful. I am not jealous, but I am offended and humiliated that anyone dares look at you with such eyes." "What eyes?" said Kitty, trying to remember as honestly as she could all the words and gestures of the evening and all their shades of meaning. In the depth of her soul, she was conscious that there had been something just at the moment when Veslovsky had followed her to the other end of the table, but she dared not own this even to herself, much less make up her mind to tell him and so increase his pain. "And what attraction can there be about me as I am?" "Ah," he exclaimed, seizing his head in his hands, "you had better not say anything. So if you were attractive—" "Oh no, Kostya, wait, listen," she implored, with a look of pained commiseration. "What can you be thinking of, since men do not exist for me?" They don't. "Well then, would you like me not to see anybody?" For the first moment his jealousy had offended her. She was annoyed that the least relaxation, even the most innocent, was forbidden her. But now she would gladly have sacrificed not merely trifles like that, but anything to free him from the torment of he was suffering. "Try and understand the horror and absurdity of my position," he continued in a despairing whisper. "He is in my house, and strictly speaking he has done nothing improper except by his free and easy manner and doubling up his legs. He considers it to be in the best form, and therefore I have to be polite to him." "Come, Kostya, you are exaggerating," remonstrated Kitty, at the bottom of her heart pleased by the force of love, for which was now expressing itself in his jealousy. "The worst of it all is that you are as you always are, and now, when you are my holy of holies, and we are so happy, so specially happy, suddenly this good-for-nothing comes along." "No, not good-for-nothing. Why am I abusing him? He does not concern me." "But our happiness, mine and yours, why?" "Do you know, I see how it happened," Kitty began. How? "I noticed your look while we were talking at supper." Yes, said he, in a frightened tone. She told him what they had been talking about, and while she spoke, she was breathless with excitement. Levin paused, and then, after scrutinizing her pale, frightened features, suddenly clapped his hands to his head. "Kate, I have been tormenting you, my darling. Forgive me. It was madness, Kate. It was all my fault. How could I torture myself like that about such nonsense? I know I am sorry for you." "For me? Me? Because I am a madman? But why should I make you wretched? It is dreadful to think that a mere stranger can destroy our bliss." "Of course, and that is what offends me." "Well, then, I will keep him here all the summer on purpose. I will lavish attentions on him," said Levin, kissing her hands. "You'll see tomorrow. Oh, but we are going out tomorrow." Alrighty, there we go. Another chapter chaptered. Have your say over on the subreddit. Have a think about or a look at the A Year of War and Peace subreddit. See if you're up for that extra challenge. Although we will be reading that book as part of this subreddit as well, so maybe, you know, bear that in mind as well. If you do that, you'll probably end up doubling up on War and Peace. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.